What's up, guys? Dave Lipson here, and welcome to another episode of the Love and Thunder podcast. We got another killer guest on our podcast today, someone who has been a mentor, someone that I looked up to, someone that I view as a trusted colleague and friend, Zach Evanesh, the owner and founder of Underground Strength. Zach, welcome to the show.
What's up, baby? It's Dave. I'm so pumped. We already, of course, did the pre-chat. And yep. So we're hyped up, and we're smart. We're like, let's just record before we miss it all.
Golden nuggets for when the red light is on, right?
And that's right.
It's always the best shit we say. And I'm like, oh, I wish we recorded that. But
gotta record.
For those of you in the audience who know Zach, you know, if you've been around strength training for any period of time, kind of in that functional training, fitness, sports performance space, you know, he's been around the block. The first time I heard about Zach was when I saw his books online, and he was publishing these gnarly training books about Rocky style training. And the thing that blew my mind was that he was doing it with like young developing athletes. And my first reaction was, man, I wish I had that when I was growing up. I wish I had that kind of strength coach. Zach, tell us a little bit, you know, just about your story and how you ended up getting started in strength coaching and working with developing athletes, and now even working with older athletes too. How did this whole thing start for you?
So funny. Well, let me before, like, I want to say how I heard about you, Dave. So good. And by the way, I'm in this like time crunch phase where I'm like running around too much. So literally I was at my gym before this doing a thick bar deadlifts, and I was like zipping home. I'm going through this like minimalist short training workouts. It's making me a little nuts. But so listen, when I first heard about you, Dave, I met up with Dave Castro. He was doing a seminar in New Jersey. You mentioned Wadapalooza. I had just met Dave at the CrossFit affiliate gathering in Miami. It may have been 2010, maybe 2009, long time ago. So he's like, man, we got to get together. I had spoken at the affiliate gathering. And so he's like, I'm coming out to New Jersey. Back then he was traveling, you know, to all the seminars. So he knew I was into strength. And really back then, CrossFit didn't have too many guys into strength. Rob, your old buddy, Rob Orlando, was like kind of the guy, you know, introducing more of the strength-based stuff. So he's like, in New Jersey, he's like, have you heard of Dave Lipson? I'm like, no. He's like, oh, used to play pro baseball, has a 600-plus pound deadlift. I'm like, what? There's a guy in CrossFit who's deadlifting over 600? Like, who is this guy? So I heard of the legend of Dave Lipson from Dave Castro.
The caveat to that is, you know, coming from serious strength and conditioning, right? Or strength sport, or I was just into lifting as a baseball player. I really believe that that was the ticket to the next level. You know, coming to CrossFit, they weren't really strength athletes, right? Like they were at that point, especially around that time, very mediocre strength athletes. So even somebody like me, who I would consider, you know, in terms of strength, like good for a novice, right? Still, like, it was a huge advantage because there were really no strong guys, you know, at that time. Plus the nature of the training is so varied that it doesn't really allow you to get to crazy high elite levels of strength, just, you know, based on the compromise you have to make with different energy systems and the amount of muscle you're carrying around.
You can't, like, I think back then a lot of the, you know, when they would give a recommended weight for men, it was like 95 pounds or 135 pounds. So I always felt kind of out of place in those early days when I got involved in CrossFit. But then, you know, I got, I think like a year after the affiliate gathering, I was like, listen, this is just not what I do, but the way Dave put it is like, listen, you know, there's people involved in CrossFit who are not necessarily CrossFit gym owners or CrossFitters. He's like, but you're a part of the community where you could contribute your knowledge. And, you know, looking back now, what's interesting is you have that baseball background. My son is a freshman in high school. He plays baseball. He also does basketball. He wrestled when he was younger. he's bigger than me now as a freshman in high school than I was as a senior. And what's the reason is in high school, my bodybuilding information came from Flex, Muscle and Fitness. You didn't really see too much talk on strength training or training for sport. I never deadlifted in high school. And all of my training was high volume, one body part per day, lots of machines, lots of squeeze and pump. So I never actually got strong. So what does my son do? Back squat, box jump, deadlift. He bench presses. And I knew that was the ticket, Dave, because when he was younger, like fifth grade, sixth grade, I had watched kids. I literally watched injuries happen on the baseball field while he would be waiting for a game. So, for example, I saw a kid in sixth grade break his elbow while pitching. And I remember thinking to myself, well, this kid probably can't do 10 push-ups, let alone one push-up. So I knew that the ticket to helping my son and daughter as they got into sports was get them strong. So kind of my background is I started bodybuilding training for sports in 1989. And unfortunately, we didn't have strength and conditioning information out there. So if I went to the bookstore, which I always did, or the school library, the books available was like the Joe Weider bodybuilding system, you know, Arnold's Encyclopedia. Arnold's Encyclopedia was great, but I didn't capture the finer details where he spoke about the early strength training he focused on, like deadlifting heavy or going to the woods and training with a training partner and squatting 50 sets until he could no longer squat. I got too much into the squeeze, pump up type work. So, you know, my mistakes were training this like pump and squeeze stuff to try to be a great wrestler. It just did not work. And so
like developing that just brute kind of core strength.
That's what you need. You need brute strength that overpowers people. You need the kind of strength that when you grab somebody, it just, you know, makes them give up. And also, like, I have been able to watch my son, you know, he wasn't very fast. And then not this year, but the previous year, you know, he started getting into lifting around seventh grade. Well, eighth grade, he noticed how much faster he is running the bases. And he's like, Dad, I'm so much faster. I said, yeah, because you deadlift, you squat, you sprint, you push the sled. You know, we want to make strength training for athletes so fancy, but we're really getting away from the basics. And what's interesting too, Dave, with your focus now on really bodybuilding is I believe that the athletes of today need bodybuilding more than ever before because they are under-muscled and weaker than ever before. And just by doing, putting muscle on them, we improve their performance. And to give people context, I say this a lot, and I'm not trying to offend people, but it's the reality, is boys today have beer bellies and boobs, okay? And that's a major problem with their shitty nutrition and just zero muscle. And a lot of times I say to myself, I'd rather send a kid to a bodybuilding gym for 3 months, let him do every machine for like sets of 8 to 15, 10 to 20, leg extension, leg press, Smith machine, and just build muscle and start eating eggs and chicken and rice and steak and having a protein shake once or twice a day. Like actually going back and kind of doing a little bit better than what I did in my younger years and then transitioning into a hybrid. You know, I think every strength and conditioning program needs bodybuilding. So my early years was bodybuilding. And when I became a competitive bodybuilder in my teenage years, I'll tell you when I really started building muscle was when I started training a little bit more like the powerlifters. And then have you ever heard of Diamond Gym in New Jersey?
Yes.
So Diamond Gym is basically the West Side Barbell of bodybuilding. And when I went there and started competing, well, I was surrounded by guys that were like incline barbell benching, three plates, squatting five. You saw bodybuilders deadlifting and barbell rowing. You saw bodybuilders, you know, we had dumbbells up to 180. So I was watching guys I know they were strong at strong AF. And when I started training in that manner, even though I was 18, 19, I developed a more like thicker physique. And I was natural, you know, in New Jersey, I competed against guys that were on drugs.
And I think you can see that in bodybuilders. You can see who's doing the axial loading, you know, who is actually using compound heavy lifts and building that kind of core strength just because they're just built thicker. They have the traps and like, it just looks like, you got that, man, that's a formidable kind of looking guy. It's not just about biceps or how wide the V taper is and how
pump up muscle you could see it. And, that actually inspired me as a younger kid, but I didn't know how to develop it. So looking at guys like Mike Mentzer, Casey Viator, they were thickly built. Even Arnold and his buddies like Ken Waller was so strong. You know, there's photos of him dumbbell benching 150s. Or do you remember Chuck Sipes? Do you remember that name, Dave, from the 60s?
All these guys you're mentioning, honestly, I feel like they're like forgotten heroes, because now, you know, especially with social media and Instagram, like nobody thinks about like the old magazines, which I know you have a robust collection of these killer old magazines with great information in it. Yes. And funny to me is like when you go back and look at these magazines and that, you know, some of the basic things they're talking about, you're like, of course, like why would someone not
right. do that, right?
Like,
yeah.
Get away from that. What was the real reason, right? Because that kind of was the reversing back to that concept of physical culture, which is where the best looking athletes are also the strongest athletes, right? And the most capable. And you know, we started becoming specialists. You mentioned stuff about kids and sports and stuff. And I'm like, man, there's so many expressions of the same problem happening in youth sports. There's the travel teams, right? It's like, hey, we're going to travel and do 10,000 tournaments a weekend and you're going to play. And it's really kind of like the cart before the horse, where kids are becoming specialists way soon. You have to be an athlete before you can really be a specialist. And that's kind of the difference in training systems. You look at like a Russian training system. The first step is GPP, right? It's just general physical preparedness. Like, can you do calisthenics? Can you do some basic weightlifting? Do you have cardio capacity to do all these things?
Oh, yeah.
You're not worried about the tracker on the spin rate of your cutter when you're 8 years old. But like, it's more about like, hey, become a formidable athletic kind of creature. And now, based on your talents and also how you develop, then you matriculate into a sport that best fits you. Right now, we're pegging them to that sport and that position like so early and locking them in that box before they even get a chance to become an athlete. Oftentimes they get babied too, because there's something to be said about not just the physical development, but the psychological and emotional development of doing hard things.
You know, Jim Wendler has mentioned this a lot with his training of a football team, is he's like, listen, if you're in high school, I don't care if you're a lineman, you should be able to run a mile. You're a teenager. If you can't run a mile, how fit are you? And so we're seeing kids too big, you know, just carrying too much fat for these lineman positions that they don't need. We're seeing in baseball, arm care. Like my son is in a travel team. Guess what they're doing this winter? Arm care program. Oh, you mean the ability to do pull-ups, push-ups, dumbbell row, dumbbell bench, med ball throw? Like before I'm doing all this fancy shit, can you do 5 pull-ups? I mean, I really just want to say 10. I feel like I'm lowering the bar. Can you do 30 to 40 push-ups? Oh, Zach, that sounds like a lot. Yeah, but in a game, you're throwing 70 to 80 times in ninth grade before they pull you out. So you should be able to do 30 to 40 push-ups in a row. And so, you know, I look back to, you mentioned all those old magazines, Strength and Health magazine, Muscle Builder Power. My favorite was Strength and Health because they'd have a segment on powerlifting, weightlifting, and then kind of like gymnastics / hand balancing. The nutrition information, Dave, was amazing. Like thinking about Chuck Sipes, or I know, you know, Dave Draper, when he was training, he always spoke about lifting heavy, doing supersets. He spoke about training in the dungeon gym underneath like a pub. And he said, This one guy would unrack the barbell to squat it, but he wanted to squat in front of a mirror. The mirror was on the other side of the gym. So he would just carry the bar to the mirror, do his squats, turn, carry it back. And so turning with a bar on your back, trunk and core strength, walking with the bar, full body strength, overall fitness. And then when Dave speaks about, like, there's a photo of Dave Draper in his early 60s, ripped. He ate steak, potatoes, and drank whole milk. I'm just like, you know, today I think, what is in the milk of today that these kids are drinking? Because it expires 45 days from now.
Well, and, you know, if you look at a guy like Stan Efferding.
Perfect.
You know, he's kind of breaking down the science of why, because that's really the way information should develop is we should make observations on, hey, these old bodybuilders, this bro science, right? Of like, oh, they're eating steak and eggs and lifting weights and doing deadlifts. Like, that's just the bro science of it. But now as time goes by, you actually start to understand like the physiology of why, like, why does it work? And now we're in a place where we can look at, why does steak and eggs work so well? Why is it so effective from a hormonal perspective, or, you know, to facilitate muscle protein synthesis? And what were the things that maybe were baloney, right? That didn't even work, that it was just like nonsense. But I think it should start that way, because a lot of times the exercise science reverses it. It starts with like, you know, it comes up with a theory and tries to prove the concept right in practice, where I think we should look at what's working on a practical application and try to understand what's in that black box that makes that work.
We call it boots on the ground. Like, as you're talking, I'm looking at the before and after photos behind you, and I'm looking at the men, and I could just tell, you know, I know you've done seminars with Stan before. So I'm like, here we go. He transformed these men with strength training, bodybuilding, and nutrition that naturally elevates the body and brings it to where we need to be. Because my boots are on the ground with a lot of these teenagers. And same thing with now, I'm kind of working with men online, mid-30s, mid-40s, and older. And it's funny, when I will program workouts, they're like, I feel like a kid again with this pump, and I haven't gotten this pump. And I'm like, yeah, you need to build muscle. You got too caught up in doing circuit training with, you know, a 75-pound barbell. You need to build muscle. And I even heard of like other guys who've left CrossFit. They're like, listen, that shit just destroys your body. You kind of have this like window of opportunity or window of time where you could handle it, and then you cannot. So now my thought process is preserve the body. How can I give and help somebody do this until forever? So I think Stan just posted his age. I don't know if he said 55, 57.
56.
Okay. So I'm creeping up on 48. And a lot of people like you, I said, Dave, are you? I thought I was 12 years older than you. So I thought you were 35.
And I wish 35.
But I heard somebody say long ago, it was Bill, the guy who created EAS back in the day, Bill Phillips.
Yep.
He said this so long ago. Bodybuilding is the fountain of youth, building muscle. And by the way, I grew up in that era. So when I was competing in bodybuilding, EAS had just come out. And so designer whey protein was
really? That. Back the training methods, the magazines, the supplements were so, some of those supplements were fucking unbelievable.
Phosphagen.
The original metrics.
Yes, I drank metrics when I was training for the Teenage Mr. New Jersey. And I was telling my friend, I had this conversation with John Wellborn. I said, metrics was like, you could only mix it with water. You needed an oversized blender because, and I said, the only flavor was cement. It tasted like cement.
The first time I took it, I was like, following the directions and blah, 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 shake it up. And I took it and I'm like, this can't be right.
it was like sludge.
Like, this does not look like the picture.
So
even, like, there was even supplements that were like, and the game has changed so much, but even like, I don't know if you remember like Twin Lab Ripped Fuel.
Hells yeah.
The ephedra in it. That was unbelievable. It was like the most effective fat loss drug ever.
It's still the same. They're like artwork or their logos is still the same. And so, yes, back then there weren't as many supplement brands. And EAS was really the first brand that I used that worked. Like taking Phosphagen, I remember hovering around 196, 198. Then I got up to 206, 208. My bench press went from 275 to 305 to 315. And I was extremely strong. And I think to myself, man, if I was, you know, chemically enhanced compared to like the bodybuilders of today, not many of them lift heavy. And listen, lifting heavy, you know, it's in context, meaning you don't want to abuse your body with it. You have to know how to ebb and flow. But when I started seeing kind of bodybuilding turn into more of a chemical warfare, yeah. I was seeing guys, you know, barbell rowing with like fixed 75 pound barbells, yeah. but they were 275 ripped. And so that wasn't the case when I grew up coming through the ranks. And Diamond Jim had multiple pro bodybuilders, and they lifted very heavy. John Kemper was really grew up through the golden era of bodybuilding. So when he would train the men and the women, they did basic strength training. Yes, they had machines, but it was really cool to see how thick everybody was. And so whenever you were done training, you go upstairs to the locker room to get changed. There was always guys preparing for the next bodybuilding show, critiquing the posing. And I remember the physiques of what everybody looked like. For example, my training partner in the team jersey, he won the middleweight for the Mr. New Jersey. And then a year, or I guess it would be like a year and a half later, he won the NPC Nationals as a middleweight, became a pro. When him and I trained, I remember him doing weighted pull-ups with three 35-pound plates strapped on. You know, he weighed 175. He benched 315 for reps. The Diamond Gym was an old bank. So you would enter kind of the lobby.
Is there like a vault?
The leg room was the vault, and okay. It was amazing. So the leg room had a squat rack, leg press, hack squat. It had the sissy squat or the Roman chair bench. Next to that leg room was maybe another office, which was a standing calf raise. There was a body master's lying down like hack squat. There was a leg press. But I remember like the leg room in the vault, and in front of the squat rack, Dave, was a old photo of Tom Platz. If you've seen it, yep. I actually got a guy to pencil sketch it for me. He's on an old bar bending, and he's in college. It says Armento's Gym. So that photo was in front of the squat rack. So you stared at it while squatting. Then there was a little poem next to it that I believe Tom Platz said. And it was framed, and it said, there are those that do and those that don't, those that will and those that won't. And the intensity in the vault, AKA the leg room, was so high. Like the things we did just from looking at his photo and that poem, and Diamond Jim had such an atmosphere. I basically stole it and put it into the underground strength gym, because as a kid, I would go to all these gyms and I'd feel the vibe in the air. And a lot of them were just dead. You'd hear a commercial come on the radio every five songs. The music was so low. Whereas when you went to Diamond Gym, there was no radio station. It was all CDs back then. And, you know, to get the music came because the guys giving us the CDs were either DJs in the local strip clubs or in the New York City strip clubs, or they were the bouncers in the big clubs. And so being in Diamond Gym as an 18 and 19 year old, the music was pumping. And then when we would go to like bodybuilding shows, like the Night of Champions, I would get to go to the clubs because the bouncers were from Diamond Gym. So at age 19, I'm in like the China Club and all these other places.
Those gyms are golden. And unfortunately, you know, they're going away.
Yes.
And really, like, you know, when you go into a gym, there's a couple that come to my head. In Chicago, there's this gym called Quads Gym.
Oh, yeah.
Out in Denver, we got Armbrust Pro Gym. Yep. Bev Francis, another really good one, right?
Oh, yeah.
But like when you go back and it's like a throwback, you see all these from the 70s and 80s and 90s on
love
the,
it.
and it's a club gym, you know, it's kind of like, okay, like a, almost like a Gold's Gym level size, but it's all privately run and owned, and it's got its own kind of mantra to it. Those are diamonds, Rand. And one of the things you were talking about, which was kind of popping out in my head, was, you know, right now people tend to like work in these camps, right? So you got like powerlifting, CrossFit, Olympic lifting, bodybuilding, and they like to stay within their bubble, and they're like, oh, this is the end all, right? This is all that I do. This is the best thing ever. And each one of those things are great. They're valuable, but they also contain, you know, the blueprint for where they're going to fail right inside of them based
That's
on what you're doing. So I love, like, if you're an aspiring strength coach or athlete out there, and you really want to add to your repertoire, you know, put yourself in the environment of those specialists. Like, go visit a place like Westside Barbell, or go out and, you know, visit one of those high-level bodybuilding gyms, go do CrossFit, and then create the program that best fits you or your athletes that incorporates all that. And what I loved about all your stuff, Zach, it was like, you mentioned like, oh yeah, we have some bodybuilding specific stuff, but there's also kind of powerlifting with maybe the core foundation, especially in terms of developing athletes. You got to be able to pick things up off the ground that are heavy and squat and press really well. And then even incorporating some like grunt work, like strongman carries, yes, sandbags. Now that kind of is versatile, and depending on who you're dealing with, you can bias one more than the other. You know, if you got an athlete that's really banged up, maybe it's not as much powerlifting. If you got an athlete that's, you know, built like a twig, maybe it's more powerlifting. But you can kind of modulate up or down and still use all of them, because they all fill in the gaps to create that complete kind of athlete.
Yeah, you need to, like you said, when is the timing right for this? And what's so interesting is I knew we would have these conversations and I would have memories. When I was in my teenage years, there was a TV show called American Muscle Magazine. Now you could find that on YouTube. But in the late 80s, early 90s, there was a bodybuilder from Ohio named Mike Francois. He came out of nowhere. He won this, like, it was like a same bodybuilding show, but in different regions. And it was called, Muscle Media or something like that. I can't remember. Musclemania. Musclemania. So Mike Francois, I find out later, trained at Westside Barbell during the day. Then at night, he would go to the bodybuilding gym and do his leg extension, leg curl. For upper body, he would do his cable crossover, seated cable row. But when he would go in the morning to build that thickness, he would powerlift with Westside guys. He would just jump in and do everything they did. So I have interviewed Louis several times and recorded it, and I tried to kind of press him to see what was Mike doing. And Louis was so like blunt to the point. He's like, well, he did what we did. You know, we were squatting, you know, 12 by 2. He didn't do a, you know, three sets of 12. He squatted with us. He deadlifted with us. Then at night, he went and did that bodybuilding work. And that's why Westside guys were so big. Their secondary workout was bodybuilding work, simply based on their weak areas. A lot of triceps, a lot of lats. But, you know, you mentioned pick when it is needed. We at my gym, at the end of each night, we send an audio message with photos of the group that we trained. So here's who trained at 4, 5, 6 p.m. And then we might say, hey, when this kid came in because he's not eating the right way and building enough muscle, we changed the rep scheme. I spoke to him on nutrition. Then I just emailed his mom and said, you know, listen, this is what we need. So we have these groups, and then we have some individualization going on. For me, you know, I'm really like at this point where I'm like, man, I think I'm going to join a local bodybuilding gym and start doing a little more isolation work, getting back on some hammer strength machines for the chest, because that stuff is good for the body. And you're right. Like, there are some of these big gyms, but they don't play music. Everybody's in there with AirPods. So you're missing the camaraderie. Whereas in Diamond Gym, you still can't do that. So the owner, Dwayne, when I told my son, I go, dude, I got to take you to Diamond Gym. you know, my son knows of these other gyms. I think there's a big one called Fusion. There's one in Philly, which is like 30,000 square feet, all this fancy stuff. But I liked when they were like, we were preparing for the bodybuilding shows. Everybody next to you was competing. And so you were training to beat them. Then you go upstairs to the locker room and you see the guy who's in your weight class, who's a little bit more ripped than you. And now you're pissed off and you're going to train harder. And when the gym is too big, we don't know, you know, we don't see anything. You're kind of in your own world. And maybe this younger generation, they don't care to know because we experienced differently. There's a guy, he was a pro wrestler, Eric Bugenhagen. He's touring all these kind of old school gyms and he puts it on his YouTube. Have you seen them?
No, I haven't seen that. I gotta check.
But he mentioned he did a video tour of Armbrust. He was the craziest gyms he was in, I think, were in Louisiana, because Louisiana was where Body Masters came from, Boyer Co. And Boyer Co, remember, was not only he was a bodybuilder, but he was trained by Arthur Jones, Mike Mentor. So he was on Nautilus. So I've trained on a lot of that old equipment, Flex. That's the best.
I got a Body Masters equipment in my garage here. And you know, it's funny, like, because like a lot of people, unfortunately, like when I started doing CrossFit, and there was this revolution that happened, you know, around the early 2000s, where all of a sudden there was this big shift towards functional fitness, and it started gaining a lot of popularity. The first thing I remembered seeing was like that Jim Jones in the 300 workout.
Oh yes.
Right. Where they're like, oh, this is Spartan training. And then, you know, I saw this CrossFit stuff and I'm like, wow, this is cool. And you get sucked in and you feel and see the utility of just practicing functional movements and working in a way that's not, you know, you're not just, you know, developing capacity in the gym, but the expression of it outside the gym. I became a little stuck up about it. I was like, barbells, dumbbells, the only thing, kettlebells, machines are stupid. Machines are stupid. Machines don't work. If you're wasting your time on machines, I don't really understand. And I think a lot of people go through that where they kind of are like, well, this is the only way.
Yes, I did too.
Now, like being older, I really start to see and recognize and appreciate the context and utility of machines and different kinds of equipment. Because I think as you get older, like you need to be able to do certain categories of movement. Like you need to be able to lift heavy and load, you know, your axial skeleton and your spine. You need to be able to, you know, take them through a good full range of motion and be able to get a complete stretch and shortening of the muscle. You need to be able to pump it out and do all kinds of high rep stuff. But movement selection becomes so important, because if you're hurt and you can no longer do that movement, machines allow you to find a way to still be able to perform that function and continue to see progress. And, you know, for me as a guy, like with a back injury, or whether you got a knee injury or a shoulder injury, machines can be an absolute game changer. For the first time in a while, you have the confidence to train hard again. You know, you can feel like I'm not scared to mess myself up, because maybe I can't back squat 600 pounds anymore, but I can get on the hack squat machine and load it up with 10 plates and I don't have any issues. And you're still able to find a way to continue to train.
Which is what we want, but you don't think of it when you're younger. You get to your 40s, you're like, man, I want to be able to do this in my 60s, 70s. If I had more space at the Underground Strength gym, I would get a room with some machines. Right now, we have a standing leg curl, a Body Masters, which is narrow. It doesn't take up a lot of space. I have a Wenning belt squat. At my previous location, I had Sorenex squat rack, so I attached their belt squat, which is called the J squat. And listen, we have many athletes, Dave, who are too weak to even touch a barbell, and it's like I said earlier, I would put them on leg extension, leg curl. But if I had like another room, I would do like a hammer strength row or a lat pull down cable row combo. At my high school, we have like one of those cable crossover units,
yep,
with tricep push downs on each end and a seated cable row. We need that, because I want kids to do sets of 8, 10, 15, 20 went. So at the end of a training session, I'll be like, 7 minutes, whatever you want. Go ahead, do curls. I don't give a shit. Do, you know, or sometimes I'll do like what Jim Wendler has as his finishers. You got to get 50 curls and 50 dips, or 50 curls, 50 pushdowns. What are we doing? Volume of work, pump up work, building muscle for an athlete is like making a car engine bigger. Now I could like soup up that car engine, more power. But as we get older, that stuff actually feels good on the joints. You see Matt Wenning doing a lot of that with his Wenning warmups. For me, I take bands. I'll do bands, sleds, light dumbbells, reverse hyper, and I just get a pump going. It also connects the mind and body. So I tell adult men when I'm programming for them, if you're going to have to skip something, never shorten the warmup. I'd rather remove a set from everything in the actual training session than the warmup, because that warmup is going to build muscle and kind of bulletproof us from the bumps and bruises of hard training.
Well, it's interesting, you know, athletes, strength sport athletes especially, like they'll usually, for the sake of maximizing their central nervous system output, they'll put the big heaviest lift first, right? It's like, okay, we're going to mobilize and we're going to start with squats or whatever. And then after that, they'll get into their accessory work. They'll be like, okay, we're going to do some hamstring curls and leg extensions and lunge complexes. When you're starting to get banged up, I would make the argument that it almost makes more sense to start with the accessory work. Yes. And warm up the joints and get the tissue hot and malleable and get yourself feeling good, and then go perform that heavy compound lift. Now, granted, you may be a little fatigued, which for the sake of muscle growth is not a bad thing either. This whole concept of pre-fatigue, of like getting a muscle tired and then trying to get it heavy and exhausted, it just makes it easier to exhaust that muscle at maybe a little bit lighter of a weight, which typically is going to be nicer on the joints anyway. But that concept of like failure and exhaustion is really where the growth takes place. But I think that people get just locked in to that one way of thinking, and it's not an all or none, you know. Like being injured and dealing with stuff with, you know, my wife with her shoulder, my back, we both had a lot of our athletes. One thing I always recognize is that when someone gets hurt, there is a tendency to purely focus on what you can't do. Like, I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't do CrossFit anymore, I can't do heavy powerlifting. And they almost close themselves off from the sea of opportunities of what they can do. You know, oftentimes it's also those things that that are usually the things you're avoiding because you don't love to do them. And so it's always a great opportunity to kind of expand and build that versatility and to, you know, pull some new things in and start blending it all together.
Yeah. So for me, my injuries made me smarter because I was forced to research and go down the rabbit hole. And here I am, quote unquote, older, going back and pulling from my bodybuilding knowledge. And that's also, I remember being at Diamond Gym, I would get mentored by, you know, John Kemper, Jason Arntz, Stokely Palmer, all these guys who were, they would say things to me on nutrition back in the early to mid 90s that we're hearing today. I think I spoke about this with my podcast with John Wellborn, but I remember at the end of my workout, I would be on the stationary bikes, which was right next to the front desk. And I remember John Kemper was there with Jason Arntz. Other times I would be out front, guys would be eating steak and eggs, and you would just talk training. But I remember getting into a nutrition conversation with John, and John would have been like mid-late 60s at the time. And I don't know how it came up, but I told, like, basically I've hit a wall, I'm not building muscle. So they're like, all right, tell me what you eat, how much have you eaten? And what happened was I was too much low fat. So like my breakfast was always 8 egg whites, 1 yolk, a bowl of oatmeal. I was always eating chicken and rice, fish and rice, never steak, never red meat. And so, and no salad. So I remember John and Jay were like, where's the fat in your diet? I was like, I can't eat fat. Like, I'm not ripped. They're like, that's why you're not ripped. So they said, what about your vegetables? I was like, I eat some fruits. They're like, where are you getting your minerals from? You've got to eat a salad and put salt on it and then put oil on it. Yep. And I was like, really? They're like, listen, man, your 8 eggs is going to turn into 4 whole eggs, 4 egg whites. They're like, what do you do when you're done training? I'm like, well, I go home and I have a shake and then I shower. Then I eat, you know, whatever, dinner later. Like, no, no, no. Like, you're going to eat a, you're going to drink your shake here. As soon as you're done, you're going to have your shake. Then you're going to drive home, which is 30 minutes. You're going to eat 2 spoons of peanut butter, and then you're going to eat a steak. You're going to grill a steak. So I started grilling or putting a steak in a frying pan and just having, and then I remember my body got tighter and I gained weight and got leaner. And then I started having a salad every day, and they're like, put salt all over that salad. And like, here we are 30 years later and I'm hearing those things. And it's funny. I was stuck in my own world. I was reading the magazines. And what's interesting is bodybuilders of the 80s and early 90s went on a high carb, kind of low fat, moderate protein. So protein was not really the front runner. And then even talking about training, you mentioned kind of like front loading your workout with all this isolation and bodybuilding work. I remember watching John warm up as he got older, and you'd see him doing a circuit, push downs, lat pull down, cable row, circuit. Training with Jason Arntz was the same thing. Jason was short, but he won the heavyweight overall nationals, not as a 250-pound guy. I think he weighed like 215, but he looked massive. I trained with Jay, and it was like leg extension, leg curl, leg press. Then we squatted. And, dude, your legs were had this crazy pump by doing this reverse order. And, Dave, even I have a buddy that coached in the NFL. He was saying with the older guys, he would front load their workout with the bodybuilding work. So let's say they were going to bench or floor press or board press. He's like, we're going to do lat pull down, cable push down. Then we're going to do seated cable row. We're going to kind of prime all the stabilizer and support muscles. Then we're going to go to the main lift, and they got this pump where they feel stable. He said, whereas the younger guys didn't feel it, but he's like, this is allowing me to elongate the longevity of an NFL guy who could now make another $5, $10, $20 million by giving him another 2 to 3 years.
Well, I'll tell you just personally, sometimes I go in the gym and I'm just like, man, my body just fucking hurts. Like, logically, I'm like, I don't, like, I went into the leg day. Was it like 2 days ago, Wednesday? I'm still sore. But I walked in, I was like, fuck, these like heavy hack squats, heavy leg press. Like, I don't, I just not feeling it. I, you know, start with the easy stuff. Start with the, you know, kind of work yourself up, get yourself high. And then you're like, all right, I'm feeling good now. And, you know, I think that it's, there's always something you can do, right?
Yes.
And procrastinating is just delaying the inevitable. You know, you got to do it. So, you know, you kind of find a way. And you mentioned like a lot of stuff about diet and training, you know, for our audience out there that may or not be familiar with where this stuff comes from. When you look at Mike Mentzer and then Dorian Yates, and now you got the late, great John Meadows and some of these high-level bodybuilding coaches. They're currently, even like Matt Jansen, who's one of the top bodybuilding coaches. It's the same. It's the idea of creating that peak tension, heavy mechanical loading, just that 8 rep top set, rip it. You know, you see pictures of Ronnie Coleman, even though he, you know, blew his back to smithereens, just like just hitting that one hard, heavy set to stimulate the muscle growth. And then you've got Vince Gironda, right, who's an OG bodybuilder that translated up to even Arnold Schwarzenegger did a lot more volume, right? He said 30 sets of squatting and all this stuff. And they all have benefit and context, right? Depending on even things like your fiber type, you know, some people respond better to low rep, very, very heavy. Some people respond better and they're able to get tons of hypertrophy out of just volume and pump work. And, you know, there's, it really kind of depends. And likewise with nutrition, the one thing I've seen with nutrition, Zach, for bodybuilding or strength athletes or people trying to improve their physique is you really have two variables to play with. The fat and the carbs. And you can go high protein and high fat, but that will not work with high carb.
Correct.
Okay. You know, that's not going to play out. The carbs create the insulin response and raise the glucose. And, you know, that's where you usually end up with a problem. Or you can go high protein and high carb, but low fat, because now you're still controlling the calories. But, you know, depending on who you are, you may respond better or worse. Everyone has different carbohydrate sensitivity. There's some people where you can give them just like a little bit of carbs and they blow up and you're like, holy shit, that's insane. And then there are some people, like a lot of the guys on this wall, that they can't tolerate carbs because there is a level of, you know, they've lost insulin sensitivity or they're not producing the same kind of hormones. But the one constant, though, is getting athletes into that positive nitrogen balance. Whether you're trying to cut body fat or gain muscle mass, you got to eat a high amount of protein. I think that's really the magical piece in the formula, is the power of a high protein diet. You see all the good stuff you want to get after. When you're hitting a plateau, when you're no longer getting stronger, when your physique isn't changing, that high protein diet really creates a lot of great opportunity in the body, because it has a thermic effect, right? Because it's hard to process protein. So your body's got to work a little harder to process it all. And that's going to help with metabolism. It's not going to spike your glucose like carbs will. And having that positive nitrogen balance allows you to leverage things like carbs or insulin spikes, because you've already got the protein in your system. So when you deplete the muscles in the training, now all you need is some kind of driver to push it into the cells to be able to help facilitate that stuff. But people are low. They don't understand where they need to be with that.
You could look at somebody's physique and see how they eat. You know what I tell teenagers is, I go, I could look at your physique and see steak and potatoes or SpaghettiOs and Pop-Tarts. Yeah. I really can. Like my son, I don't want to harp on this, but you know, I could control what's happening in our house. 99% of the time, his school lunch is chicken and rice or beef and rice. I put it in a thermos. I heat it up in the morning. His breakfast is always eggs and toast. Sundays is pancakes and bacon. He has a protein shake every day. When I say, hey, Ethan, like I put my hand on him, it's solid. But I have to work with other kids whose parents didn't grow up with this kind of strength training bodybuilding background. So they're buying a lot of processed food, convenient food. The answer to getting everybody to transform starts with clean up the protein and increase it, right? They're usually skipping breakfast, not because they're fasting, but just because they're, oh, I'm too busy. Then they buy a school lunch. Or if you're talking about an adult, he's probably buying some sort of fast food or eating pizza. Then when they get home for dinner, it's carb or some sort of processed pre-made meal where, listen, to make things easier, you just have to cook. What I do is I grill chicken in quantity, chicken breast. I'll marinate it in some oil and vinegar, balsamic vinaigrette overnight or at least 4 hours. I grill a ton of chicken. Then I make a lot of white rice, sometimes Spanish rice, sometimes brown rice. And then for me, I'll have ground beef, but I get my ground beef. We started doing this during COVID just for me thinking of how soft people look. We started buying our meat from a Mennonite farmer. And then I also purchased meat online like a month ago from Stay Classy Meats. And that's been quality. So I'm staying away from hormone injected shit. And also, you know, I think what you're saying is so spot on, Dave, especially as we, I always say in quotes, get older. Listen, your metabolism starts to slow down because you're not building muscle, you're not bodybuilding anymore. So as you get older, you got to lean more into the bodybuilding methods. And you mentioned volume training. You know, right now I need to get more volume. My life is crazy. So I need to figure out a way to do more volume or get to the gym and do a second session or just at home. I bought my son for his birthday a pair of 25-pound Ivanko dumbbells with a little bit thicker handles. So I know what he's doing in his room. He does more curls, lying triceps, rear delts. And I told him, I said, Ethan, this will help you build muscle, but you should do some pump up work after a baseball game when you're pitching to help with recovery. And so I think we've also gotten away from work. So Dave, as you know, in the 70s and 80s, the volume was very big. minus Mike Mentzer, and then Dorian Yates came around in the 90s. But for the most part, I think people have gotten afraid of work and volume of work, and we need more volume. This is why also in athletics, Dave, I'm seeing athletes getting injured now before games begin. They're getting injured from practice, which means they don't have staying power. They don't have durability. And how can I build durability? Start implementing bodybuilding circuit work, meaning the end of our workout might be something like sled, carry, curl, or sled, carry, any dumbbell tricep exercise. But they haven't done, I feel like when you're bodybuilding, you're building a suit of armor. You're building body armor. And this is helpful for men our age because you get hurt doing dumb things like, oh, I went to pick up my kid or I pulled my seatbelt and I, you know, my back twisted wrong. Well, you know, are you throwing medicine balls, every other day? I think we've gotten so conservative with training and so scared that people need more of what you and I are really, encouraging men and athletes to do.
You know, it's for interesting, like most people and you know, my audience and my background is obviously in baseball and then a lot of CrossFit, right? Like a decade teaching seminars and coaching athletes in CrossFit. And, you know, the way my methodology has been developed is just based on my experience with myself and my athletes and where I'm like the challenges we've had, right? And one thing I'll see with CrossFitters is, you know, CrossFit is so intense, right? It's like maximum intensity, but for like 5 to 15 minutes, right? And I think it gets to a point where, you know, when you first get exposed to that, you react very favorably just because it's beyond your current level of exposure, right? You've never done that. You've never done those movements before. You've never worked that hard before. So you kind of go through this honeymoon period. A lot of people are coming to CrossFit from like farting around the gym, so to speak.
Yes.
Like, oh, I do 10 reps here. And then I sit on the machine and check my cell phone. And then I do another 10 reps. And, you know, one thing they're not doing is they're not performing high value compound functional movements, which are going to give you the most bang for your buck most of the time. And they're not working hard. So obviously they're not getting results. And obviously when they start doing those things, it's like, pew, like a lot of progress, but then it gets to a point where it's kind of like plateauing, right? And it's not getting much better. And when you kind of bring it back to, let's say, doing volume, and instead of just working for 5 to 15 minutes, you're doing 45 minutes of hard and heavy lifting. I think some of the best conditioning work you can do is going to be with weightlifting.
Yes.
And things like truncated rest periods or long, do a set of 20 rep back squats as heavy as you can. The first thing you'll notice is that you can't fucking breathe, right? You're like, oh my goodness, right? So like it has such a tremendous stimulus, and getting the volume in and working hard, like, you know, we call it, you know, having sessions that after 45 minutes, you usually start getting diminishing returns. But if you make those first 45 minutes hard and heavy, that's plenty to get aerobic and anaerobic adaptations in your body and improve your composition. For most of our athletes, they're like, yeah, that's what I just need to work hard for an hour and not spend 30 minutes mobilizing and preparing myself to work hard for like a 5 minute. It's just not enough to create the adaptation anymore.
Yes. You're right. We, and I think you have to ebb and flow. So like, I have an online training team. And so right now we're going to go through a bodybuilding phase. And normally during the holidays, I kind of back off, do a minimalist twice a week, optional third, cause you're busy. But I said, nope, we're not doing that. We're going to actually do a bodybuilding phase, cause I know you're probably going to be eating more. And I want that. It's like an athlete after football or wrestling season, they start eating a lot. Well, that's a perfect time to incorporate bodybuilding, because I want to utilize your added nutrients to build that suit of armor. And for men, you know, going back to what Bill Phillips said, bodybuilding is the fountain of youth. You know, Arnold is still bodybuilding. And I think that if you are a CrossFitter, I think that's what actually some of them are doing. They must have this kind of phase where I think you can't go that intense over and over. Maybe, listen, if you're a genetic freak, right? Like some people train wrong, incorrect technique all the time and never get hurt. You are a anomaly. You're a one in a million. You're an outlier. I don't want to base my training on this one or two or five out of a thousand who don't get beat up doing this. But I think you want those bodybuilding phases. And if you can't do a 20 rep back squat, you could do a 20 rep dumbbell goblet squat. And, you know, when I worked at the college level, this was when Cammy was still competing in CrossFit. I remember you guys were thinking of coming out and training with us when I was at Rutgers. In the deep off season when we were not competing, I took them through a 2-week mini cycle of 20 rep squats. I know, like no college strength coach is doing a 20 rep squats, but you know what? We don't have competition. They're not in school. It's summertime. So it was prime time for me to do that kind of volume, old school strength training.
It's interesting because when Cammy really started leveling up in CrossFit competition, it's when we started pulling other things into the program. We started pulling conjugate lifting into the program. We started pulling bodybuilding into the program. We started pulling strongman into the program. And all of a sudden, that CrossFit specific training she did got better. But on that 20 rep back squat, great. You know, if you guys out there, check out, it's an old book, Super Squats.
Yes.
Very simple program. It's right up your alley, Zach. It's just.
Oh, yeah. I have the teenage athletes. So I told a kid about it 2 years ago at my high school. Yep. I said, ask your parents to get this for you for Christmas, Super Squats. Well, he sees me the next day. He's like, I found it online, you know, PDF. I'm like, of course, your generation.
I feel like an asshole. I write 25 workouts a week and change it. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm sitting here doing 4 hours of programming a week, trying to come up with cool intensifier bodybuilding stuff. This is one fucking program.
Yep.
And it starts with behind the neck presses. If you can't do that, you guys can do like a neutral grip press. You like work to an 8 rep. And then one set of 20 rep squats, as heavy as you can. You build up to it, obviously, but you do your set. And then you go to pullovers, and then you hit some RDLs, and then you do bench press and rows. It's like a total body. And they're like, yeah, do this like 2-3 times a week. And the only rule is that the next time you do the 20 rep squat, it has to be more than the previous time you did it. So for context,
I love that book.
I started at 315, and this was we did this for 8 weeks.
Oh my God, Dave, I remember your old blog, 365 days. I can't believe I'm just remembering that. I love that blog. I loved it.
Cammy and I did this. I started 315. She started at 185. And by the end of the 8 weeks, I was doing it with 450 and she was doing it with 245 pounds.
I remember. Damn.
It was interesting to me. And I'm like, I don't know that I've gotten like exponentially stronger, but what has happened is the act of holding that weight, that's the hardest part of it. It's not performing the squats, it's staying under tension for like 40 seconds with a lot of weight. That was the biggest adaptation I saw, was just like the core strength that it was able to build. How simple is that?
Yes, and so also their nutrition was the Get Big drink or the GOMAD diet, the gallon of milk.
I was going to say not recommended.
Right. Especially,
there was such stubborn stuff too. Strength coaches would say, I remember Mark Ripito saying, if you're lactose intolerant, get baby wipes.
Dude. Well, also back when that book was written, I'd have to look at the copy, the original. So I have the book here. But I had a kid at my school, that kid 2 years ago was very tall, very skinny. And I said, listen, like there's this book and I want you to read it. Cause why did I want kids to read it? It talks about work ethic, talks about eating a lot. Also listen, in the 70s, when I bought if you're buying a gallon of milk, that milk was way more pure than the shit of today. Yeah. So it makes it hard in that respect, but I have kids reading that book cause that kid found the bootleg PDF. So it's in our like Google classroom for my, students at the high school, because I'm a strength coach at a high school, but it gets them to understand the work ethic. And also thinking about the rep ranges, everything is 8 to 12 reps. And today, if you let a high school kid do his own thing, he's going to max out on the bench. He's going to miss reps. They're not doing enough reps build muscle.
The tripod set up with your cell phone camera, which is what a fucking nightmare.
It's, dude, the Gym Fail Nation Instagram makes fun of those kids so much. Like me running into the gym at 6 a.m. before all the teenagers with Crocs come to set up their phone with the tripod. But, Dave, I'm remembering I used to love reading. And that blog has to be out because it was a blog spot. 365 days of squatting, dot blog spot. And so I remember
that was something different. But what that was I had a friend who had passed away from
sleep. I remember this.
I wanted to do like a fundraiser for her. And I'd seen people be like, I'm going to do something every day to raise money for this person. And a lot of times it was like running. Like, I'm going to run a mile every day, or I'm going to do burpees every day. And I'm like, nobody wants to see me run or do burpees. Like, that's not interesting, but I can squat a good amount. So what if I took, you know, a squat number that I felt like I could comfortably do any day, even when I'm sick, even when I'm tired, and see if I could just do that every day for a year. So we picked a weight. It was going to be 455 pounds for at least one rep every single day. Back squat, front squat, doesn't matter. One rep, high reps, doesn't matter. And what was cool was that I got to travel around as I was like teaching seminars, and there would be times where it would be like 9 o'clock at night, and I'd be like, fuck, I got to do my squat. Why am I going to do this? And I would literally call up a CrossFit gym and say like, hey man, can I come over? Can you open up your gym for me so I can do this squat? And sometimes I would go to people's houses or their garages, or
I remember this. It's
cool.
You were posting videos, and I don't even know if it was through YouTube. Like, you would have to upload the video to the blog spot. I really miss that kind of purity and rawness of training. And even how I would have to learn about somebody is, oh, I'm going to read the blog. Mm-hmm. Today, I always say to myself, who's reading my blog? You know, they only want to look at YouTube or Instagram. It's kind of a different form of learning, but I miss those early days because it's how I connected with you. I also remember, you know, it was Rob Orlando and I guess Dave Castro organized this trip where you guys were kind of traveling from you were moved to LA at one point. Were you San Diego?
Yeah, we were in San Diego, and Rob and Dave and I did a road trip up from San Diego to California, all the way up to San Francisco.
And then Rob did Seal Fit.
Terrible idea. And I think he did that at the end. So we spent the week traveling.
Coral camp. Yeah.
And Dave would walk in there and he would be like, all right, let's try to do some gnarly stuff. And the easiest thing for us to do would be to like just take a CrossFit workout and like double the weight or something. You know what I mean? Like, oh, they're going to do it with double the weight. It's interesting content, but really fun to like pop into different gyms. But, you know, Zach, years ago, when I first talked to you, I was asking you about writing, because one of the things that I always looked up to you for is not just as a coach, but in your ability to actually, you know, write a great book on training. I had no exposure to that. And I called you up and I was like, dude, I want to write a book. I don't know how to do it. What do you recommend? And you told me, go lock yourself in a shitty motel for a week and don't leave until it's done. That's exactly what I did. Now I'm like 9 books later. What great advice that was. Just fucking, you know, because you have all these experiences. And I think that tradition in strength and conditioning, which started with the magazines and the writing and the books, like, I love that tradition of passing knowledge and experience down through literature that you can sit and read and think about and digest. Like, I take so much pride in my collection of training books. And I know you have this robust collection of magazines. And even now to this day, right? I mean, I write in my journal every night. You know, it's like adventures in the weight room. You know, like, you're just like writing down these experiences and thoughts. And I always looked up to you a lot for like some of the great books that you have.
What's interesting is so I self-published my first book in like late June, and it's a blend of fiction and nonfiction. It's like lessons and stories from the weight room. And I self-published it. And then I got the rights back to my Encyclopedia of Underground Strength because they stopped publishing it during COVID. Because I think the book publishing company was getting done in China. It was cheaper. Then COVID happened. Everything in China stops. So I just released that like 2 weeks ago, the second edition. But when I had to write and finish that encyclopedia, I told my wife, I was like, send me to a hotel. She got me like this, like bed and breakfast, like in some backwoods area. And having internet connected to your phone was very rare. Social media was kind of new. So dude, I just abused coffee and wrote from like 6 a.m. till 2 a.m. And if I needed a break, it was like, take a walk, bang out push-ups. If I needed a nap, it was like, I just kind of wrote through the day and night. And so it's like, I don't know how I completed this. So this book, do I have the, okay. So this is Iron Journeys that I published.
Oh, right? Nice.
So it's smaller, but the original, look how big it is. It's 200 something pages. So, but my friend said, he's the editor, said, listen, the stories, you know, it keeps coming down to like hard work, basics. He's like, so let's split this book in half. And I said, all right, we'll split it in half. So I'll have to release the second one. But here's why I think writing's important, Dave. You know, you mentioned like adventures and weight training in your journal. Writing brings out your creative side. Whereas if we're on the phone, I'm just a consumer. It almost kills my creativity. So even when I have interns at the gym, I tell them like every week there's a new project, but they have to put it in a notebook. You have to, all right, I want a 3-week mini cycle for an eighth grader who plays baseball and basketball, and it's the in season of baseball, but I want it on paper, not on your computer, not on your phone. And that's tricky for this younger generation who's, you know, 20 something years old. I also think, you know, these books I'm reading, like stuff on my shelf and all those old magazines, I believe the books will never be burned down and disappear. But what will happen to our YouTube videos? I don't know. What will happen to our podcast audios? I don't know. But I could buy books from late 1800s, early 1900s. So I want my great, 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 great grandkids who I'll never meet to be able to like, oh, this was my great, great, great grandpa, Zach Evanesh. Look at this book. So yeah. I think
look at how strong he was.
Right. I want that inspiration to live on forever. And you know, you're a father. So now I think your writing is going to take on a different, like deeper meaning. You know, to me, I always talk about go beyond the weight room, go beyond strength of a barbell on your back. What is the deeper meaning?
You know, as you go through these evolutions in life, you start to view what you're doing, not just as like a practitioner and the science of it, but you're seeing it from a different angle, right? You're seeing it from like, yeah, you know, I was kind of only looking at it from one direction when I was younger. And now that I see it from the other side, I realize that maybe I was wrong about some stuff, you know, maybe I shouldn't have just dismissed those things or
said, it's okay. It's okay to be wrong. Like, you know, we're now at an age where we are more humble. Not that you and I were not humble, but I definitely think my earlier years, I was maybe more extreme to one angle. Yep. Because I'm speaking as a 28-year-old, a 32-year-old. I haven't had enough injuries to humble myself, or I haven't had enough experience to humble myself. Now I'm just a lot more open-minded. I've often had this saying where I say, don't discriminate against the many ways you could get strong. You know, the many training tools, the many training methods, even like, you know, with all the stuff going on in the world, I always say to myself, like, I don't have room in my heart to hate people, you know, let alone in training, hating a training method. Like if you look at Twitter and the strength coaches who are going to die on what kind of squat is most important. It's like, it's such an energy drainer to me where when I see that, I'm like, well, maybe that person's going to be best for a box squat, or maybe that person needs more pause squats, or maybe that person needs more controlled eccentrics to build muscle and improve their change of direction. I'm never this is the only way. That way sucks. But in my early years, I would have said machines suck, which was stupid because I trained on a lot of machines. There should be a little aspect to it, or maybe a lot of an aspect to it, depending on who you are and where you are in the world of your own training.
Well, that's kind of one of the challenges that I've faced a lot, especially, you know, the attitudes of CrossFit towards bodybuilding, especially in the early days, were very aggressive and negative. Bodybuilding, yeah, stupid, mirrors in your gym are stupid, bicep curls are stupid. And I don't even think they really understood what bodybuilding really was, right? I mean, right. They know what bodybuilding is done wrong, the same way you know what doing CrossFit done wrong looks like. But like years ago, Dave Castro and Nicole Carroll, who were the two directors of training, approached Cammy and I to develop our own course. And this was right around the time that I started like hanging out with Dr. Brad Schoenfeld and learning about hypertrophy science and trying to work around my back injury. And I was like, man, I got a great idea. We can do a hypertrophy for functional fitness course. We'll talk about the physiology, the methods, yeah, the mechanisms, the practical application. And they were like, what do you mean? Like bicep curls? No, we're not going to do that. I'm like, it's so much more than bicep curls. And that's honestly what pushed me to start Thunder Bros. I started trying to write it down with like what this is, like where this overlap is. But I think like as a strength coach, I think it is important to try to write, even if you suck at writing, you're not gonna be good until you practice anyways, right? But just start writing some stuff down. And it's interesting because you should have an approach. You should have a method, a mission, a vision statement for what you want your training to be, right? And that gives you a GPS. It gives you a level of clarity and focus. So you don't just get swept away in one trend and another trend. Right. Kind of have that North Star to work towards.
And it's okay if you're writing, like I sometimes come across my old blog posts and I'll edit them and I'm like, whoa, not only does my grammar suck, but the message here is like, comes off rude and arrogant. And I think to myself, who would want to listen to this shit? You know, but ironically, I have a buddy of mine. He had multiple CrossFit facilities in the early 2000s. He says, Zach, back then, what really drew people to you is you were very black and white. Like you, the way you trained was on this side of the spectrum. He's like, now you're smart, you're intelligent, you talk about being open to everything. And he says, to be honest, that doesn't attract people and it doesn't really repel people. So when you are an extremist, you attract diehards, right? Like look at, you mentioned Jim Jones. Anybody who's a Jim Jones affiliate, every Instagram post is black and white and has this kind of blanket quote that's like a throat punch, so to speak. Yep. And they're not kind of in the middle of Jim Jones. I think I'll use a little of it. They are, you know, die on the sword. And I think the early days of CrossFit, what attracted me was the garage, a barbell, a kettlebell, a sandbag, and doing something outside. Then when it got so extreme, I was like, you know, like, all right, you're going to do 100 back extensions, 100 pull-ups, 100 handstand push-ups. I was like, I'm nowhere near that. I needed something a little more, quote unquote, level-headed.
Back then, I mean, I feel like back then, like CrossFit really had an edge. It was like Fitness Fight Club, you know, it was really about turning people away more than ushering them in. It's like, this workout's too hard for you. You can't.
Right? We're going to throw down.
Yeah, we're going to throw down and fuck you up.
Versus like, Zach, come on over. Let's train together. Let's have a good time. I'm like, damn, dude, I'm entering a war zone now of training. So it attracted, I guess, people in their early 20s, maybe early 30s, who could handle pain.
Me, like coming off of that professional baseball career and like a lot of my counterparts, you get done with your sports career and then you're kind of like, well, what now? Like, why would I train? Why would I push myself? Like, what ambitious goal do I have? And what CrossFit gave to me was first that outlet to express intensity and aggression and you know, to be able to go to that red line. And then to have a goal of like, yeah, I want to run faster. I want to lift heavier. I want to be able to do these things. Like having that direction was really nice to feel like a competitor still.
You competed. Yes.
Yourself. What happens though is, you know, a lot of people go to the gym because they want to look good and feel good, which is honestly most people. That's going to be 99% of people. And then they find CrossFit and or whatever, and they got kind of swept away in the training method, or maybe even the goals, like I want to be the fittest athlete on earth. And then sometimes they realize, I don't want to be the fittest athlete on earth. I just want to look good and not be hurt and I'll be able to do stuff and live a long life. You know, that's kind of the evolution I'm seeing.
Well, Greg Everett, when he had his gym in, I think he was in NorCal, you would know better, but now he's in Oregon just doing weightlifting. What he expressed to John Wellborn was like, I'm so tired of like a 35-year-old who has very little experience coming to me telling me he wants to win the CrossFit Games. Yeah. He's like, really what we need is practice some weightlifting and then do some bodybuilding work and some conditioning. That, as we now know, is like, that's a great way to actually give you longevity because you're not destroying yourself. And that's actually how I look at strength training for athletes. Like I tell them, if you kill the main lift, it will kill you. So you need to work the bench press, but never miss a rep. You need to squat hard, but never get stuck. We need to do cleans and focus on speed, not lifting so heavy and catching it with our legs so wide apart. You know, I've seen people really injure themselves with the poor technique on that. Then bodybuilding / strength work as a little bit of a circuit or supersets, as Dave Draper always recommended. Then I want to hit sleds. I want to get some hill sprints. Like, it's interesting how like I'm now just simplifying, getting rid of anything that's overly intense, unless I know you could handle that intensity.
That's one of the biggest mindset shifts that I see in our athletes, is taking the focus off of the whiteboard, right? Where you're writing your score down on how fast you went or how many reps you got or how heavy you could go.
Yes.
Putting the focus on the training effect, which is what you're talking about. It's like, how many quality repetitions can you accumulate? They're going to actually create the adaptation, right? Because when the focus is just on the number, that doesn't mean that you trained well. That, you know, that doesn't mean that you're actually doing things right or getting what you need.
Unless you're training for CrossFit. Yeah,
exactly. Unless it's like purely for the competition side. But, you know, the funny thing is when you start focusing on the training effect, those things improve on their own. You don't need to worry about it. It's going to be there. It's going to develop. You don't have to just at all costs try to get that last pound on the bar, because it's when you get greedy, right? You're not ambitious. Oh. You're getting greedy. And you decide like, okay, this is my CrossFit Games today, that you end up with those hiccups. You know, it's the speed and the load that will usually be the things that are going to take you out.
As a strength coach, I will emphasize to kids, not because I am encouraging them to not go heavier, but I'll say, listen, you know, when you hit a home run, does the umpire ask you how much you bench before he determines that this is a home run? Like, they don't care. Or when you score a touchdown, they don't know how much you squat or clean. Now, that's not an excuse to be weak, but what I'm explaining to them is what you're saying is the end result we're looking for is points on the scoreboard for sport. Or if I'm an adult, I don't want training to interfere with your life. So, for example, when I realized I was doing things wrong, I remember giving my daughter a bath. You know, she's several months old. Now my daughter's 17, but I remember it clear as day. I'm on my knees trying to give her a bath in the bathtub. My back is killing me. And I'm like, to get up, I have to like push off the bathtub. And I'm thinking to myself, like, what am I doing to my body? I can't even like give my daughter a bath without my back being on fire. And yep. So now I say to adults, training should give you a better life. If it interferes with life, we're doing too much. It's too hard. We need to make adjustments. So the way I look at training for sport and life is don't leave it all at the gym. I want the energy to be for your sport, and I want the energy to be for your life. So if it's interfering with either of them, then we are doing something wrong.
Well, it's interesting. It's like one of the phrases that I always pick up on when I'm training with Stan, and I think he might have got this from Flex Wheeler, is stimulate, don't annihilate.
Lee Haney would say that back.
Yeah.
Lee Haney said it you in his TV show.
You don't have to beat yourself into oblivion, you know, and it takes people different times to recover, right? I mean, that's one of the interesting things about training splits is, you know, maybe you can train a muscle group more frequently if you have better recoverability. Maybe you need time. The important thing is that you can effectively stimulate it and then recover from it. And you had mentioned multiple times before too, in one way or another, just alluding to the fact that muscle is the currency of longevity, right? If you want to live, you know, strong guys are hard to kill. You know, what do you call a guy under 200 pounds? A victim.
I just saw that video. I was like, oh, damn, you know, there's some badasses who weigh 175. But
yeah, and I love it, especially for guys that kind of like, you know, you said you're 48. I'm in my 40s. A lot of our athletes are kind of in that 35 to 50 year old boat. Unfortunately, you start losing muscle mass after the age of 26. Honestly, that's where you're going to start seeing declines in hormones and loss of muscle mass. And that continues to happen every single year, usually to a greater percentage. The good news is you can do something about it. You know, you can prioritize building muscle and you can do these things well. And I know that you and I, we probably got away with a lot when we were younger that we can't get away with now in terms of training, nutrition. But, you know, that's part of the process too, is understanding that, you know, as you do get older, you have to have those increasing levels of precision and accuracy, or maybe you just can't go in the gym and do whatever the fuck you want. Like maybe right, it has to be, you know, a little bit more specific.
It's funny. And Dave, I only got a few minutes because I'm taking my son shooting today. My wife and daughter went to the city to ice skate with some friends at Rockefeller Center. But you said stimulate, don't annihilate. You could also find on YouTube, Lee Haney had a bodybuilding show on ESPN and it started in 89. And he would have guests come on, he would lift with them, and he would have these phrases like stimulate, don't annihilate. And then he'd be like, unless it's your calves, then you annihilate them. But if you see Lee Haney lifting, he would bench 315. He would squat maybe 405. He actually didn't lift heavy. Now, he was obviously genetic freak, but, you know, he was doing barbell curls with 95 pounds. When I was at my prime, I'm doing barbell curls with 135. So genetics versus what you do, like you got to learn, he would say, get the most from the least, like maximize what you could get from training. And for us, you know, certainly for me, I didn't grasp those things when I was young. Cause when you're 13, 15, you're pretty dumb. You know, you don't really, you're just kind of doing it your way. But it's funny that now here I am almost 48. I am remembering things 35 years ago that I was watching, but I didn't grasp it. So stimulate, don't know. Although Lee Haney would do the way he did.
Sometimes it takes 35 years to set it.
Embarrassing to say, but you know, when Lee Haney would lift, when he did forced reps, they weren't grind reps. When he was about to grind, somebody would assist him for three more, and they had a kind of a rhythm to it. But I saw a video like a month ago, and he said, listen, you know, he has his own bodybuilding certification. He's like, I've had no injuries, no surgeries. And he trained a little bit more intelligently. His nutrition was also very interesting. He would talk about like eating turkey sandwiches. He always had this like balance, you know, like, whereas for me, I was like, I won't eat bread. You know, I took it a little bit extreme. And now I look at, you know, you want to be balanced. You want to build the muscle. You want to challenge yourself, but you never want to destroy yourself. And I also say this, this is kind of going to be my closeout here. The younger generation and older guys, I think they're too focused on what can I do in the next 6 weeks, 30 days, 12 weeks, where you need to start looking at, hey man, what can I do in 6 months, a year, especially looking at high school kids. Listen, you're 125 pounds now, but if you gain 2 pounds a month, you could be 150. But 2 pounds sounds like nothing, but 25 pounds in a year is a massive transformation. And so we need to look at, you know, that accumulation of things.
Yeah.
Play the long game.
You're so dead on. I think we're really parallel in that. It's like one of the things I'm advocating to people is, you know, think about training as figuring out the formula for you to accumulate as many quality reps as you can in your lifetime.
Right? Nice.
Good technique and good intensity. So, you know, it can't be easy. It's gotta be a little hard, but you can't give in to your ego, you know, and just be like, put the fucking weight on the bar, because that's gonna take away from that at a point. So, you know, you gotta play that long game. And you're totally right. Also, in terms of progress, is like, it's not a it's not really a month long or year long journey. It's more of it's years and years. You know, you look at these guys that have impressive physiques, especially in their mid and later years. You're looking at decades of good training.
Just, oh yeah,
you know what I mean, like you that's what it takes to really get to that level, and diet as well.
I mean, when we say it's a lifestyle, that's the ticket. You know, I always tell my wife, I'm like, listen, I didn't even know what a cookie was until I met you. So, but the whole household has to revolve around the food prep, exercise on the regular. And so for the men out there, if your house is not on the same page, you know, they have that old saying of get your house in order. If you are trying to meal prep, but your wife and your kids want all this shit food, you know, you're a horse going one way and the carriage is trying to pull the other way. We want everybody on the same bus, go to the same bus stop. And so what does that mean? Chicken, rice, beef, a small salad every day, you know, vegetables that are in season, lots of water, obviously, getting rid of shit in the house. And, everybody's got to be on the same page. For one person to get better, it's got to be a team effort.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. You can see that with even like, you know, with bodybuilders, a lot of bodybuilders end up, or people in fitness, like they end up marrying people of similar interest, because you can't live any other way. It's like, it's just not going to float where you're like, honey, I got to go to the gym for 2 hours, but good luck with the kids. You know, there's got to be a level of understanding and empathy there. And the one team, one dream, right? I mean, that's the mission statement for your family. And I think that's the beautiful thing about having a family, is you can create your own mantra, you know, and define what you're about. Zach, thank you so much for coming on. It's always great to talk to you. We could go on for hours with this stuff. It's out of control to edit this thing down. But thank you so much. Always a pleasure. Where can people find you, Zach?
Strong Life Podcast will be great. And if they Google Zach Evanesh, they'll come across the YouTube, the Instagram. I have a newsletter at ZachStrength.com that I think adult men will really enjoy. And later today, I'm going back to reread 365 Days of Squatting.
Oh, good. All right.
I'm remembering when you were starting your first gym in your backyard in California. So I was actually really jealous. I was like, that's what I need. A gym with no roof where the sun shines.
Outside. Yeah.
Perfect. You're awesome. The best, brother.
Thanks, Zach. It was great talking with you, dude. And I will talk to you soon. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Later, my bro. Awesome.
All right. Nice job.